No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Since next week is Flag Day, and we're going to start our show today discussing D.C. statehood and the struggle for equality here in Washington. In addition, we're going to talk about anything else important that we can think of. But before we go any further, let me introduce my co-host and a person who has been at the center of my own personal struggle for equality, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from the great state of Arizona. I haven't quite reached equal status with Kathleen yet, but I'm still trying. Hi, Kathleen.
Hello. No problem, Senator Brown. You're never going to be equal. You might as well just accept it.
I know that.
And you might you might sleep a little bit easier just realizing that's never going to happen.
I'm almost ready to accept it. Yeah,
good.
I think, you know. For those of you that may not know this, Kathleen and I have been friends ever since our first political campaign, I think, together. And I, of course, have been a much better friend to Kathleen. Kathleen used to live, I've got to tell you this story. Kathleen used to live in New York, and she was, when we were both single, she used to live in New York, and she would come to Washington every once in a while because she worked for a trade association that did work in Washington as well as New York. And every time she would come and I was dating some new woman, she would have something terrible to say about her. You know, like, oh my God, she doesn't have any brains,
or she's,
you know,
too young, she could be your daughter.
Too young. Exactly. She always had some terrible criticism until I met my wife. And then my wife, Kathleen came down and she wanted to write something down, and she asked if I had a pen, and my girlfriend at the time, my brand new girlfriend, pulled out a 69-cent big pen that was camouflage. It was made out of camouflage.
It was the first ever camouflage of anything. It was Pratt Whitney, wasn't it? It was a Pratt Whitney.
No, she worked for Litton. They had a defense arm, and she worked for the defense arm. And Kathleen said, wow, this is a really cool pen. And Patty said to her, well, you ought to keep that pen. And Kathleen turned around to me and said, you ought to marry this woman. Which I did, of course.
And she was the best thing that ever happened to you, of course.
That's true. But I was still a little offended that you didn't get more than a 69-cent pen for me. You know, I think you could have, if you'd held out a while, you could have done better. Who knows? You could have gotten a pen and pencil set if you hadn't been so eager to get rid of me.
I was really looking forward to the cup. You know, I think I got the camouflage cup.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
But it was the beginning of the whole camouflage thing. That was like when, that was, had to be like in the 80s, right?
Late 80s. Yeah.
But tell everyone the story. When I met Michael, he's still very handsome, but you were like what, maybe about 28, 27?
Yeah.
You had a mustache.
Yeah, 27 when we first started working.
Yeah. You were really... You seemed tall. You were very fit. You had a great personality, but a really terrible car. I remember your car was.
I had the worst car. And you know what? To this day, I mean, the one thing that I remember most about Mark Warner, who's now the senator from Virginia, is that he had a worse car than he was That's the right. only one at the DNC that had an uglier car than mine.
That's right. And you know, I do have to, we have to, I don't know if we've told the story to the audience about, we all worked together with Mark Warner, who's now the senator from Virginia, and then Terry McAuliffe, who's the governor of Virginia, and a bunch of other people back in the day. And I remember when, after Carter lost, remember, it was just the very few of us. We were just kind of like, we were the lowest paid. You know, remember, we were at, lasted through the Carter-Mondale, you know, campaign. And when he lost to Reagan, remember, there was just a few of us. But remember, Mark, we were like, well, whatever is everyone going to do? And people said, well, you know, Mark Warner's going to go door to door selling phones. Like, you know, remember the Fuller Brushman? Yeah. And we were like, oh my God, really? Oh, yeah. Things are really bad. And yeah. Then later he ends up like, he never sold phones door to door, but he started his Nextel.
Right. Right.
You know?
Yeah, we were laughing at him.
Yeah, you guys were all laughing at him. And I always, Mark and I always
and,
got along.
And he became a multimillionaire by starting a cell phone company that became gigantic. So that just shows you that we're still, you know, we were on top of our game then, and we're still on top of our game now.
That's
but,
right.
But today, we're going to talk a little bit to start with about the situation here in Washington, D.C. Those of you that are regular listeners understand that part of the reason we started this show was to let America know about the fact that the District of Columbia is the only place in the world, actually, the only democracy in the world that denies equal voting representation to the citizens of its capital. We're the only
Paris or none of those, no place like that. They all get the vote. They all get to vote.
Yes, and they're all equal with every other person in their country. And of course, we in Washington D.C. have the equal burdens of democracy. We pay the same taxes. In fact, we pay the highest per capita federal income taxes in America, and we fight in wars, and we do everything else that citizens are supposed to do, and we're actually on the lowest rung of citizenship in America. In other words, the people of Puerto Rico, the people of Guam, the people of the Outer Marianas, all the territories have more rights than the people of District of Columbia, because they have control over their own legal systems and
their budgets, right?
And their budgets, but we don't have that. What we have is total control of Congress, because Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution says that the Congress shall have exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over a district not to exceed 10 miles square. Which by the secession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress becomes the capital of the United States. So, in other words, Congress can do whatever it wants in the District of Columbia, and it often does. We now have a statehood bill in Congress, in both houses of Congress, and the reason for that is twofold. One, statehood makes us equal. All states in the United States are equal to one another. So if we become a state, we'll be automatically equal. All it takes is a majority vote of both houses of Congress and the president's signature. The president, President Obama, has told me personally that he will sign it if we can get the legislation through. We've tried everything else. We've tried constitutional amendment. We've tried legislation. We've tried every other remedy. Nothing's worked. So this is the best, easiest, and most effective remedy. And thus far, we have 67 co-sponsors in the House and 16 in the Senate. But guess what, Kathleen? They're all what do you think all our co-sponsors have in common?
That they're not independent.
Yeah, that they're not independent, that they're Democrats. Not one Republican, not one independent, all Democrats. So shame on you Republicans out there If you're a Republican and you're out there listening to us and you think that there's a legitimate reason to deny the 643,000 loyal American citizens of the District of Columbia the same rights you have, I wish you'd call in and tell us. You know that we've been part of America since America began. Just a few little quick facts about the District of Columbia, besides paying the highest taxes. When the national anthem was written by Francis Scott Key, who was a member of the D.C. National Guard and was on a mission to Baltimore to rescue a doctor when he was captured by the British and wrote our national anthem. Our National Guard was started by Thomas Jefferson, the man that wrote Taps, which has become the song that's played at every military funeral and is played at the end of the day at every military base, American military base around the world, was a Congressional Medal of Honor winner from the Civil War who was also a Washingtonian. We have had more than 200,000 of our citizens fight in combat during wartime. We've lost well over 2,000 of them defending our liberty, and we need to be equal. We need to be a state. And the last reason that we want to be a state, the last reason we've come up with this, is because the Constitution says the District of Columbia can be no bigger than 10 miles square, but it can be as small as we want to make it. And actually, in 1847, we gave the part of the district that was given by Virginia. You may know that the district was created by the secession of land from Maryland and Virginia. Well, we gave that part back to Virginia. So there's even precedent for making the district smaller. So that's what we would do. The area in which everybody lives would become the state of New Columbia, and the area that's the nation's capital now, you know, where the government is, the Capitol, the Smithsonian, the Mall, the White House, all the government buildings would stay Washington, D.C., capital of the United States. So we wouldn't have to change the Constitution. We didn't have to rearrange anything. We just have to create a new state, and this has been done before, Virginia and West Virginia, making a state out of another state. So that's where we stand, and that's what we want to do. Go ahead.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
I always remember in history as the one thing that I would hope that you would ask anybody from American history is that motto that I always remember hearing is taxation without representation. And is that in the Declaration of Independence, or is that ever mentioned anywhere?
You know, it's funny that it's not. And there was actually a lawsuit. It's a good point. There was a lawsuit brought in the 1800s that was resolved. The majority opinion was written by one of the greatest chief justices of all time, Chief Justice Marshall, who said, and somebody sued on that basis, that taxation without representation was a principle of our government. And he said, in his opinion, it wasn't a principle. It was just a clever slogan that was thought up by the revolutionaries to garner support for their cause. So he put it right in there with like Coke Gazette and, you know,
Nike, do it. Like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh,
just
my
do it.
Gosh.
So we all accept it as a principle. And of course it's on our license plates because as Americans, we all accept it as a principle. And we know that the war was started over that. The revolution of Boston Tea Party was actually a reaction to taxation without representation. It got the ball rolling. But according to the Supreme Court, you know, it's
not like the pursuit of happiness, huh?
Yeah, it's right up there with the pursuit of happiness.
But it's not
not in the Constitution or in the Declaration of Independence like the pursuit of happiness. So
you would think it would be somewhere. I don't know why. I just thought that was like the basis of everything, that how it started.
Yeah, it really was. And it really was in a lot of ways, and you would think it would be somewhere. And by the way, just so you understand out there in America why the District of Columbia finds itself in this position to begin with, is that when the country was founded, it really was a great experiment. It was a great experiment. Nobody had ever tried democracy on this scale. So the founding fathers really didn't understand how the whole participation thing was going to work. And they were scared about it. They didn't let women vote. They didn't let African Americans or Native Americans or people that didn't own property, which is very interesting. They didn't let you vote if you didn't own property because we were an agrarian society. And they thought, well, if you don't own property, you really don't have a stake in the government. So you shouldn't have a voice in the government. Of course, we changed all that. But the people of the district are still on the outside. And the reason that the vote was taken away from them is that when the Capitol was in Philadelphia, when Congress met in Philadelphia at Carpenter's Hall, there was an incident where pensioners, people who had fought in the Revolutionary War, hadn't been paid. So they rioted and they came to Congress demanding their money. And Congress called the governor of Pennsylvania and said, call out the militia. Well, being a good politician, he said, well, I'm not going to call out the militia on people that vote for me, especially on veterans. And he refused to do it. And Congress had to hightail it over to New Jersey. And Kathleen and I have both spent a lot of time in New Jersey. And yeah. We know how scary that is, right? Nobody wants to run back to New Jersey.
Nobody wants to go back to Ironbound.
Right. So when they came to Washington, the first thing Madison said was, we must be in control of the jurisdiction in which we reside so that we don't have to experience that and we won't be controlled by the state which we find ourselves in. They also didn't understand the difference between state and federal government. The federal government was very weak and the state governments were stronger, and they didn't understand that that would soon change. Well, not soon, but 100 years later, the federal government would be supreme in all cases. So they really didn't understand how it's going to work, and it kind of left us out in the cold. Now the issue becomes partisan. Like I said a few minutes ago, there are no Republican co-sponsors of our legislation. And one reason is that we have no Republican elected officials in the District of Columbia. We have 13 members of city council, 11 Democrats, 2 independents. We have a Democratic mayor. We've never had a mayor that wasn't a Democrat. We've never once voted for a Republican for president. We may be the only jurisdiction in America that could say that. We've never once voted for a Republican for president. Now, you should know that we didn't get to vote for president until the 1960s. Lyndon Johnson was the first person that we got to vote for. Wow. For president. So it hasn't been that long, but still, in 50 years, we have never elected a Republican. So the Republicans stand against us because they don't want 2 Democratic senators and a Democratic member of the House.
Well, one question I'd like to ask you is, basically, why do you think there has been no Republican?
Well, we have a very strong Democratic Party here, and we've had a few Republicans elected in the past, but very few. And, you know, most of the people in the District of Columbia are registered Democrats. We outnumber Republicans dramatically. I mean, I think close to 70% of all the registered voters are Democrats. So it's kind of a stacked deck for us, I guess, in that case. And a lot of people argue that, that there are Republicans, local Republicans, who want statehood because they say, you know, if we opened up the process, then it would give Republicans a shot. And,
exactly.
And we have a closed process right now. And personally, as a Democrat, I think we don't have Republicans because they're mean people that hold us down.
Now, wait a minute. You can't become like Rush Limbaugh. You can't become like, what's this,
why?
O'Reilly,
why
calling people names.
Liberal Rush Limbaugh. You know, you've just given me the perfect segue to talk about the Capitol Pride Parade yesterday.
All right.
I was at the Capitol Pride Parade yesterday, which marched down, you know, like 2 miles through the city, and over 150 8,000 people show up for this. It started out as a gay pride parade years ago, and now it's turned into gay pride and other issues. And we had a great time.
Is that what it means? Capital Pride? Yeah. What, pride in the capital? So anybody can show up?
Pride in our city, basically.
Okay.
And it's still predominantly gay people that show up and organize, and the gay community puts this parade on, and it's a lot of fun. Patty wouldn't let me wear my Speedo, damn it! But you know, a lot
of people she was saving us all she was saving the public from nightmares. But that's okay.
There were a lot of people with peacock feathers and bikers and all sorts of people, and of course, I was in the parade, and I had a contingency of statehood people with me marching for statehood, and we were very well received. People clapped for us everywhere, right. and they cheered, yeah, because locally this is a big issue and we want to see it happen. But also at the parade was the Westboro Baptist Church from Topeka, Kansas. Do you know these
not
guys?
Not the one that goes out, they go out to the gravesite and make a scene because of the military accepting gays?
Yes.
Why were they there? Why were they?
They were standing there holding signs that said, "God hates fags. God bless dead soldiers. God bless dead soldiers." On their website, if you go on their website, you will see that they are there's an item on their website that says, you know, "Thank God 6 more soldiers have died." Their position is that God hates gay people, and he hates our country. He hates America. They have 2 websites called God Hates Fags and God Hates America. And they think that God hates us because we have an agenda that preaches equality even for gay people, and they're not only against gays, they're against Jews, they're against Catholics, they hate Catholics, they hate everybody but this little fundamentalist group, which is really just an extended family of their pastor Fred Phelps, who died in March.
But how do they get out to someplace like D.C.? How do they have the people to go to all these different places? I mean, is it that big
There's not a lot of them. I mean, there are a dozen of them, you know, and they show up with megaphones and you know, and I'm proud, as you well know. I don't drive my Harley a lot, but I still have a Harley, and I'm proud of the fact that the last time they showed up at Arlington Cemetery to chant, "God bless your dead son," to some poor family that was burying a soldier who had stood up so that these jackasses can be free enough to say stuff like that. A lot of veterans showed up at their Harleys with their Harleys. And when these guys started, they all started their Harleys so that the family didn't have to listen to that. So that they drowned out, wow. They drowned out these guys with the sound of their Harleys. But yeah, you know, it doesn't, and I don't know what your feeling about this is. I know you don't like these people either, but I not only find it despicable that they do this, but I find it particularly despicable that they do it in the name of God.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, it's again one of those things where, you know, this is this kind of country that, you know, it's just so amazing that we allow people to say things that even we know deep in our hearts are just terrible things to say. But at the same time, because we are a democracy, you know, it's their right to say it.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes this country great. Although, you know, I have a hard time with wanting democracy for pedophiles and you know, rapists and all this stuff. But, you know, the way the system works, it has to be for everybody, not just for who we like or who we think should get it. So, you know, like I say every time, there's one thing I remember from my ex-father-in-law was just the amazement he had on how this system worked. You know, that once somebody gets voted out, you leave the office. You don't bring in the tanks. You don't barricade yourself, and you don't do a coup. I mean, you pass the power over to even the person that you may hate the most. That's just the way the system works. So I always get so, you know, kind of amazed when people say, oh, well, you know, the government's going to come and knock down your door and steal your gun, or it's just a way for them to find out what you're doing and follow you. It's still the best place to be. I wouldn't want to be anyplace else. So I don't know.
And that's true, right? How many Americans say, you know, I wish I lived in the Ukraine?
Or Brazil. Right. I mean, Brazil is going to have such an amazing, you know, these big events like these, the World Cup, you know. I had several friends when I was in New York who were from Brazil, and one young woman whose son was the age of my son, and this was probably when they were six, you know, they had kidnapped her sister's daughter, baby. And it's still been 2 years, and they hadn't gotten her back because they were negotiating the price. And it kept on going up. It's going to be – it's just amazing. You know, you don't realize – I think always there should be a bill introduced in this, in Congress that says an American has to spend at least 6 weeks in some point in their life to keep their citizenship, and they need to go to a third world country. And they need to spend some time out there, because that's when they're really going to appreciate what they have here. So going to vote for a day once a year wouldn't be such a hardship, because they would see how lucky we have it here. You know, it's amazing when you travel to poor countries. You go to Mexico, it's not so far away. Go to South America, or go to these places, like go to India. You know, go to China. I mean, you know, you realize just how much we have, and it's just so sad to hear people who don't vote and who don't want to be involved. I mean, that's part of our show, is to try to keep people realizing that it's even at the really small local point, you got to get involved and you got to take part of the system to make sure that it continues, because, you know, it's just getting crazier and crazier, and the time is going faster, and there's so much media and there's so much technology that we really got to start getting involved, or it's going to slip away from us.
Well, and you know what, in Washington now, you know, you're aware of the local political scene, and you know we've had a lot of corruption here, but in Washington, you know, we're in the nation's capital. Politics is really what we do here. It's like, you know, it'd be like building cars in Detroit or making movies in Hollywood. Politics is really what we do. And we got a little more than a third of the registered voters. The vast majority of voters didn't show up for the primary. I mean, they're now talking, they don't know what's going to happen in the November election, but the last mayoral primary that we had in April, was the lowest turnout, I think, in the history of mayoral primaries, or at least in recent history. And it's just crazy, man. Everybody should vote. My grandmother was the same way. She was from Italy. And the one thing that she always, always did was she voted in every election. She voted and she made sure, you know, she put on her hat and her gloves and got all dressed up. And I mean, when she was in her 80s, she still made it to the polls and voted, because she grew up in a place where, you know, it was run by local. Oh, and women didn't have any rights at all. So my grandmother was born in the 1880s. They didn't have any rights. So she always made sure that she voted, and she instilled that in us, not as a privilege, but really as a responsibility that you had to. It was the way we fed democracy and kept our democracy strong, and it still is. But you
that to me, the fact that women should of any one particular gender should even be more vote motivated to vote, because we haven't had the vote really that long. African Americans should be going out and voting, because they haven't really had the vote for that very long. And I wonder if veterans couldn't do some kind of campaign to say, you know, because this is what it's all about, right? They go to fight so that we can keep democracy alive in the United States. And that is some of the three basic ones is freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, and the freedom and the right to vote. I mean, you know, you go over and you see these people with this little mark, you know, where they had voted, and they can't believe that finally in their lives they've gotten the ability to vote for somebody to run their government. And we, you know, we got to do voter absentee absenteeism because people are too lazy to go and vote at the polls. So let's send you a ballot 3 months early and let you vote, which just messes everything up. And you don't even know if it's that person that voted. It can be anyone in the household or anyone who gets the mail because they sure don't check it. I just have such a problem with this because these guys go and they sacrifice their life to keep our democracy, and we're too lazy to even get up and vote once a year. We should be ashamed of ourselves. Right, and I wish some veteran would get up and make that something that he addresses really hard in the next coming before November, because I think if anybody would listen to them and they say, you know, this is what we do. We go and we put our lives on the line and lose it so that you can vote. And come on, America, you're too lazy. Please.
Right, and all you have to do is drive over to the polls. But you know what I don't understand? I have a hard time understanding this, and maybe we'll move to it. But when I can take my American Express card, and I can go online, and I can buy merchandise all over the world, and it's secure. You know, I've only had my credit card stolen twice, and both times it was done in person. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like somebody went somewhere and used the number. Once at a store and once at a gas station, both times American Express found out what was going on, you know, and I wasn't charged anything. But if I can do that, if I can purchase thousands of dollars of stuff on the internet, if I can pay my bills every month on the internet and that's secure, why can't we vote on the internet? I don't understand why we can't that's vote true. On the internet. Why, you know, you couldn't have a secure ID number, you know, and vote. But, yeah, we got to do something to get voter participation going. And right now we're going to take a break we're going to play. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, anybody in D.C., I'm sure you've seen Sweet Honey in the Rock, but if you ever get the opportunity, these women are just phenomenal. I heard them in a church, and it's still, I remember every song they sing. It was just, they are incredible.
And we open our show every week with this song, and we only play the first verse, but now we want to play the whole thing for you. It's about 6 minutes long, which is longer than our normal break. But we want you to hear this because this tells the story of the disenfranchised status of the people of the District of Columbia perfectly. Everything from start to finish. Nobody could do it any better. So here's Sweet Honey in the Rock. And I'm going to get off the – Kathleen and I are going to talk a little bit while you listen to this music. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue. They couldn't believe it when I said...
And we hope you enjoyed that. That's the history of D.C. Disenfranchisement, and we're proud to say that Sweet Honey in the Rock... I don't know if all of them are native Washingtonians, but several of them are, and we're proud to claim them. They're, as Kathleen said, they're a really great group. And also, as Kathleen said, she's surprised that people feel in our democracy that somebody's going to kick down the door and they need a gun to protect themselves. And in that vein, I want to talk a little bit about what's gone on this week with the shootings in Seattle. At the college and the Christian college, and also in Las Vegas, Nevada, where two cops were killed and two other people were shot and critically wounded.
And then there was the shooting that was out in California. It's almost amazing now that it seems like every week there's something. Yes. You know, and it's not surprising anymore. It doesn't give you that. I mean, everyone's getting used to this stuff, which is really scary. You know, instead of going to the streets and just saying enough is enough, guns don't kill people. People kill people. Well, they didn't have the guns. They wouldn't. I mean, I understand what you're saying. And to me, the big issue, too, is our whole mental health you know,
yes.
programs. They're non-existent. And in this crazy society, we even need more of that than we ever did. Because I don't know what it is. I guess parents are too busy with media, with their job, with whatever, that they're not taking care of their kids. Kids feel disenfranchised. They feel alone. And they pick up the guns. And if you notice, a lot of these kids who don't have these good relationships with their parents seem to be able to get guns at home. So, yes. you know, when can we not find a solution so that, you know, your 14 emotional, you know, hormonal child who thinks everyone hates them or you hate them or they right. hate you can't get the gun and go out because maybe they didn't get something or a girl said no or, you know, they didn't get to get on the basketball team. I mean, it's just right. amazing.
Right. Well, you know, that used to be the old song that we would sing when we were kids at camp, the old camp song, you know, nobody loves me, everybody hates me, I'm going to eat some worms. You know, now it's like, nobody loves me, everybody hates me, I'm going to go get a gun.
Yeah.
And look, you know, I want to state this for any of you gun people out there that are listening, please call in and let us know how you feel, because I'm a liberal politician and I don't want your guns. I want to keep the guns out of the hands of crazy people, and I want to keep the guns away from people that are criminals. So I don't understand why we can't have background checks. I don't
understand
things like this.
And, you know, and I don't find myself as much as a liberal about the gun issue as I think you do. But I do yeah. think there's not a reason why you can't have a background check. I think that anybody now, any family that has guns, better make sure your kids are not having problems at school or behavioral problems, because that seems to be the next step these kids are taking, to whether it's to get attention or whether they feel they're, you know, when you're high school, right? I mean, and things are going bad, it doesn't seem like it will ever change, and you want to kill yourself. You want to, but now instead of just killing yourself, you're going out and killing as many as you can before you kill yourself. So there has to be something that's done. Because, you know, our system, we no longer, I mean, it's hard to raise kids in a village because there aren't any villagers, it seems.
Right.
They're all off, you know, doing something else, and nobody wants to get involved. And, oh, you know, he looked strange, he acted strange, but I didn't know what I could do about it. Well, we all need to step up and not worry about being embarrassed if we know that somebody's not quite right. We need to sound the alarm. And it's strange to me that here are these parents that told the police, I mean, if that was my child, I felt really nervous, I would get him locked up. I mean, you know, do something. You can't expect the police and everyone else to take care of your own child. You know, I mean, you have to be responsible for your children.
Well, that, I think, are two really extremely important points. And the first is that, yes, you're right. We all have to come together. Parents have to be responsible. The community has to be responsible. It's not just about guns. That's what I agree with. But, you know, until we can sit down and talk about it, we can't get anywhere. So as long as these people refuse to talk, as right. long as they say, you know, you have the Second Amendment is the only piece of the Constitution that's totally inviolate, that you can't make any laws about guns. This is just crazy. You know, even the First Amendment, the most sacred amendment, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, even though you have the right to freedom of speech. There are limits on everything. And, you know, this really bothered me last week. I read this article, a letter in the Washington Post, written about the California shooting that you were talking about. And, you know, the guy stabbed. What an angry man this was. Young man, he stabbed his three roommates to death, and then he went out shooting people, and he ran over two people with a car. So this guy writes in and says, well, everybody's talking about guns and how the gun people are responsible. The guy hit somebody with his car. Would you hold the car people responsible? Yes, and we do as a society hold the car people responsible.
Right.
That's why you need to have a driver's license. You need to have your car insured, and you need to have it registered, or you're in violation of the law and you can't drive it. So let me tell you, if you would get a license, buy insurance, and register your gun, I wouldn't give a damn what kind of gun you had. But, you know, when we have to keep all this stuff secret and you can have any gun you want and we can't keep them out of the hands of crazy people, I got no problem. I got no problem with law-abiding citizens having guns, you know?
Well, let me ask you this, because this is the next thing that always comes up. And it's always, so, yeah, well, okay, you want to, you know, you want to make law-abiding citizens have to register, have to go through this process, but the criminals have the guns. So you want to take it away from the guys who are the good guys, but yet all the bad guys got the guns. So what are you going to do? How do you get the bad guy?
That's
How do you get the guns
sword?
Away from the criminals?
Because I'm a good guy until I kill somebody, and as soon as I kill somebody, I'm a criminal. We have a caller on line one. Let's see what Susan has to say. Susan, are you there?
Yeah, hi.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for calling in.
What's up? You're welcome. I don't know what I'm hearing something in the background, but I'm talking to you, so I'm confused.
Oh, I'm sorry. What do you want to say?
I'm hearing Kathleen in the back. Am I on live?
Yeah, you're on live.
You're on live.
We'll get rid of Kathleen.
Oh, I don't know why I'm hearing something else on Carol's phone. But okay.
All right.
Well, I would like to say that my feelings on gun control have changed greatly in the last few months due to a tragic loss of my son, who was a gun advocate. And months back, we watched a CNN documentary on gun violence throughout the world. And it was quite interesting to me and very informative. And I think that I do realize now that to me, I don't think anymore that guns are the problem. I agree a little bit more with my son than I did before. And I think that background, it's really in the background checks, that the guns are in the hands of the right people. And I never thought I would say that.
So you believe that what needs to happen is that people should be registered in a sense, but that people do have the right to have guns in their homes and defend themselves?
I do feel now that people should have the right. I never felt that they didn't have the right, but I was definitely more against the thought of it. And I don't know that I feel that way anymore. It's not something I want in my home, but I certainly understand people wanting, you know, it in their home. And,
right,
you know, having watched the documentary, I, you know, what came across pretty clearly is that you know, you look at some of these other countries and they don't have, you know, they have more guns, you know, the people have more guns in their possession, and they're safer countries. And a lot of it comes down to that it could take years and years and years to obtain go through the background check. And I think that is what's lacking.
So then, in other words, you think that if everyone had a gun, then in a sense, people wouldn't necessarily, a burglar or somebody who wants to cause damage would think twice, because knowing that almost every family or every home may have a gun that they could use to protect themselves, that might.
Yes.
Well,
that might make the criminals think twice.
My son had done a school paper on it. And of course, you know, his bias was always towards gun ownership. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think there is a lot of truth to what you just said, Kathleen, that it's, you know, I think that, yes, it can be a deterrent. And I'm not making this all sound good, but I can just say my feelings have changed over the last few months. My son was a murder victim, fought back. he fought back against people that were coming in to do harm and hurt and steal. And, you know, they didn't get away with it. Well, at least a few of them, because my son fought back. And we'll have a few bad guys off the streets. And, you know, maybe if other people thought that, you know, people in the home were going to have guns and were going to be willing to fight back, they would think twice. So,
well, I'd like to mention your son did lose his life protecting his friends. Am I right about that? He was helping. He was protecting the people that were in his home from getting hurt by fighting back against these guys. And
that is correct.
I want to tell you, you know, my heart goes out to you, because that's got to be the worst thing in the world, is to you know, have to bury your child before you yourself die. And I just commend you, because I know it takes a lot of strength. But I think you talking about it, you know, because you are seeing things in a different light, you know, can only help what he did in his memory, because I think that takes a lot of courage, Susan, and I commend you on it, because, you know, I was like you. I used to not like it. I used to think it was not the right thing, and Michael and I have, you know, kind of had arguments about this. Being out in rural America, believe me, you do need to have something to protect yourselves, because it's not, you know, it's not like, you know, Leave It to Beaver, that generation anymore, where, you know, everyone left their doors unlocked and you knew your neighbors and your neighbors knew you. And so I see definitely a need for it out here. I get a little bit more frightened about it in a city. And I wonder, you know, sometimes when I watch too much, you know, scary stuff, you know, I wonder if I wouldn't be too trigger happy. But I guess, in a sense, I would have the option to protect myself if I had a gun.
Well, and, you know, I think it's important, regardless of how you feel about this issue, it's important to have this dialogue. It's important to have the dialogue, right, to bring people of good faith, you know, and good intentions together to talk about this, so that we don't have this either guns or no guns. You know, there ought to be a way.
Yeah, there's something
that we have
in between.
Safe.
There should be some. There's got to be some something in between.
Yeah.
And I think the in between, you know, certainly involves a really, really serious, criminal background check, and should take years, and should be something that's, you know, taken really, really seriously. I guess what I can say is that it's interesting to, I didn't think that my views would sway. I still don't want it done in my own home. I'm not saying that I want, you know, to own guns myself, or maybe I will one day if I change my mind. But I certainly do understand the desire, and
did your son believe in background checks and all that, Susan? Did your son believe that that's something that should happen?
Yeah,
background checks.
Well, what my son's, what his words were always: "Guns don't kill people; people kill people." That was, you know, he was, you know, a serious advocate of gun ownership and Second Amendment and the right to bear arms. And, I mean, he's not wrong. I mean, he wasn't wrong. And I just think we need to look at some of the other countries that have a lower incidence of homicide. And they exist, and it's not the video games that are doing this. Case in point, you know, Japan, if you thought these in the violent games would be, you know, those countries, you know, looking at Japan specifically, their homicide rate is very, very, very low. And, you know, it's just, you know, why are we not looking at the countries that are doing things right? And,
Right. And that
well,
that
I think it's
really valid. Those are all really valid points, you know. And I think on this show, even though Kathleen and I have disagreed a little bit, we both feel like, yes, we want to get people together and make it safe for people to own guns and use them appropriately and to protect their life, their home, their property, their family, their friends. Those are all appropriate uses. And of course, our condolences go out to you and your brave, brave son for standing up.
And I do think, thank Susan, you. That you have to start participating in the conversation, because I think you bring a whole nother light to it, you know, and you bring your experience and that speaks volumes. And that's the kind of thing that needs to be done, you know, because instead of just having the PR people and the media people talk, it's people right. who's been touched by it that really right. have the impact and know what they're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
That's absolutely yeah. true. And if we could get some more people talking about this, we would love to have everybody on and have a round table about it. But unfortunately, it's a subject that people don't want to talk about on the air. I don't know why, but it is. And we appreciate you calling
Susan
in.
Susan has talked about it.
Yes.
Yes, and maybe we can get somebody else.
I apologize
else.
That,
all we need is a couple
that my presentation on the issue may not have been as succinct and well thought out, but I just wanted to say that, you know, depending on your circumstances and your experience and I guess unfortunately having such a horrific crime happened to someone in my family, you know, my thinking has come a pretty long way, you know.
Well, it's first of all, I would say your thinking is your presentation was very succinct, and your opinion is the most important opinion because of your experience. These are the opinions that need to be heard, and these are the opinions that need to bring our nation to a place where we can coexist with the guns that the Second Amendment of the Constitution says that you have a right to have. Unfortunately, we're out of time now. But thank you so much
thank
for calling
you.
In. And we'll talk to you
thank
soon
you,
again,
Susan.
I hope. All right. Folks, we're out of time. Because Kathleen intimidates me, I'm going to let her have the last word.
I just want to say to Susan that, you know, it may not have been said perfectly the way she always does speak very well, but, you know, it comes from a place of experience, and she's one of the nicest, special person I've met. And I think she says it better than either you and I can, you know,
that's right.
And that's the kind of people we need to call in. And we need to find that way to meet and to debate and to come to some kind of compromise. So with that, America, we hope you enjoyed our show. Thank you again, Susan, for calling in. And that's it. Now to you, Mr. Senator Brown.
Well, and just to close, to say that Susan is somebody that I know personally. Her son,
yes.
Mark, was a fine, brave young man. And I appreciate the courage it took for her to call in.
Yes, I do too.
Yep. I love this woman. She's a great woman, and she had a terrible loss. And I think her opinion is really important. And we hope that other people with either similar opinions or differing opinions call in so that we can start a dialogue and we can stop this violence. We'll talk to you again next week, America. Thanks for tuning in.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.